I'm here in Livermore with Frida Wente Callahan, and we are giving a tape interview for the Livermore Heritage Guild, which I understand then will be typed so that a transcript will go to the library just for everybody's use. What it says is the purpose of the Livermore Heritage Guild is to gather and preserve interviews for scholarly and historical use. The tape and transcript will be filed with the guild, and then they will be available for scholars, etc. Frida Wente Callahan is actually my husband's great aunt. My husband is Eric Peter Wente, who is the grandson of Ernest August Wente, who many people know as one of the Wente brothers. Frida, who I'm sitting here with, is the sixth child of the Wente family. Her middle name being Wente, her last name from her second marriage now being Callahan. Her first husband's name was George Tubbs, so it's Frida Wente Tubbs Callahan. Frida was born in 1896, which makes her a very young and healthy and robust and happy 86 years old. We are just beginning to think about the questions that are going to be meaningful and fun to talk about. And I know so many happy, wonderful vignettes that we've even reminded ourselves of today. It's going to be a pleasure to see where the interview goes and choose what it is that we want to talk about. I think the first question I'd like to ask you, Frida, would be to have you tell me a little bit about your mother and father. Like we were just talking before we started recording about how your parents met, which I know is an area of controversy between you and Brother Ernie. But tell me a little bit about the fact of the matter, which was that your father came over from Germany, et cetera, and how he came to be in Livermore.
My father was the one of five sons, and as was the custom in Germany, the family property went to the oldest son, and the oldest son was named Ernest. My father was the second son. Therefore, he would not have a chance at having the home property. So his father had made a peculiar, as I remember my father telling me, his father had made a peculiar decision that if any of the boys wanted to go to America, the older son must pay him a certain amount of cash. And my father took this and came to America with a little money in his pocket. He had had two older half-brothers who had come to America before him, but he did not know their addresses and never came in contact with them during his lifetime. He stopped first in the central part of the United States and worked on a farm, and then came to California and worked in the Napa area, and also worked around the springs, Adams Springs.
What did he do there? Not in the wine industry or in grapes?
In Napa, he was in grapes.
Uh-huh.
And at the Adams Springs in the summer when he'd work around, I don't know, he repaired fences or whatever work Dr. Prather, who owned the springs, mm-hmm. asked him to do.
What does that mean, the springs?
Well, the Adams Springs was a spa where the people in those days would go and spend a couple of weeks in the summer and stay for their,
ooh.
Drink the water for their health. My father and mother used to go there later years and spend a couple of weeks in July every year and meet the same people would gather there every year.
Oh, how fun.
But his real job was with
Charles Krug.
Charles Krug Winery in St. Helena.
Uh-huh.
And after a certain period of time, he decided that he wanted to go in business for himself and bought this property in Livermore.
And he was in his early 20s, I suppose, at this time?
names.
We could look in the Bible here and just and see what's the date of his birth.
Well, he was born in 51.
And he came over in the 70s, perhaps. Yes. So he was probably a very young man, young adult.
And he came to Livermore in the early 80s. And my mother came over to this country about, as I remember, about 1882. And the reason she came to America was because she had two sisters here in California.
I wonder what had made the sisters already come.
My mother was the youngest of a family of 11, and one sister had already come and settled in Toledo, in Goshen, Indiana, and had married. A brother had settled in, Troutline.
So the
and she had a sister who settled in Toledo.
Did the sister marry in Germany and then come over?
No, they came over here and brought them over. They just emigrated like many for a better place to live and make a better living.
Right.
And two sisters were here in California. One was married to a Swiss by the name of Gutzweller, and they had a small family mom and papa grocery store in St. Helena, which is close to Napa.
Right.
And the other sister was married to a German by the name of Rudolph Franke, and he had a pickle factory in Oakland. And that is where my mother went to live and stay when she first came over. She helped take care of her sister's five children, and also part-time worked in the pickle factory.
There's a branch of the family, then, I'm learning for the first time, even though my last name is Wente these days, I'm learning that that's a branch that I've never heard anything about. Your mother's sister, whatever became of them?
Her sister died when she gave birth to the fifth child. And her brother, in the meantime, she had married my father. And her sister's husband then raised his children with the housekeepers, that family. The other sister in St. Lena also died later, just natural causes.
But I wonder where your mother's sister's children, I wonder if they're still in California, those generations of people.
No, it's the next gen. They're all dead. The next generation are here, though.
Yeah.
And these Frankies that you have met, Stanley, Raymond, Barbara, they're the next generation. They're Rudy Frankies. Mama's nephew's children.
Yeah.
And they're living around here.
Oh.
Yeah. Barbara lives over in Lafayette.
Yeah.
And Stanley lives on the peninsula somewhere.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated, and that is a branch of the families that I really don't know about. I want to have you tell about the wedding between your mother and father, and then the first few days in Livermore, and what Livermore was like when they came and had the little house by the jail.
In those days, the young Germans would gather on Saturday night at some person's home, and they loved music, and they would sing or dance or entertain themselves, as did the Danes and the various nationalities. And my mother's sister and her husband were very fond of dancing and liked music, and so their home was usually the center where all the young Germans gathered on Saturday night. And they lived near the pickle factory, and the pickle factory had, as I've been told, had a flat roof, and they'd dance on this and sing on this top of this pickle
factory.
And
this was in Oakland.
And this was in Oakland, when Oakland was a small city.
It must have been if it was about 1880.
Yeah, that's when it was. And when my mother and father decided to get married, that's where they were married, on top of the pickle factory. And they had a big a big wedding of all these young Germans that they'd met, and a very, from what I have been told, a very nice wedding supper. Mm-hmm. And they stayed in Oakland at the hotel one night, and then came by train to Livermore, where my dad had rented a small house on 2nd Street.
Mm-hmm. We're on 4th Street right now in Frieda's home. Frieda, what year, as an aside, what year did you and George build or purchase this home?
1922.
You've been in this home since 1922?
I've been in this same home for 60 years.
So when your parents first came to Livermore, they were really a couple streets away on 2nd Street.
Just a few blocks away. And next to this little house that my dad rented was a vacant lot, which was adjoined the little city jail, where mostly, as I've been told, was mostly for people who had imbibed too much.
For the drunks.
And they left them out in the sunny days to be in the sunshine on this lot. And my mother, being very kind-hearted, would go out and slip them cookies or something through the wire fence. And she said every day, in the morning, there'd be some drunken occupants of the jail out there waiting for her to hand them some cookies through the wire fence.
Somebody liked that had been picked up the night before. Yeah. And she was the new bride and living in this little house.
That's right. And after the house was, my dad would walk back and forth out to where the winery was, because he had two horses, but they had to do the plowing and so forth, so he would walk. And after the little house of four rooms was built, they moved out there to the, and lived right on the
now,
ranch.
Now, had he already started to build the winery? Your father had already started the winery out there?
I don't know. I don't think he built the winery then. They were planting vineyard then.
Maybe he was producing a small amount in the Mel winery.
No.
No?
No, he didn't have the Mel winery then. The original winery is those acres right where the present winery is.
Right, where your home was, where
That's
you
right.
grew up.
And my mother and father started this house there with four rooms, and as the family grew, mm-hmm. he kept building on another room, and we ended up with 11 rooms and couple of porches.
Which is due to the fact that your parents had seven children.
Yeah, there were seven of us.
And you're number six.
I'm number six. And then they first, I think, as I've been told, there was a certain amount of vines planted already when my dad bought it. And he and my mother, I've heard my mother say that she would go out and help him pick the rocks off the rest of it where he was going to plant more vines, and after she had her baby, she would take the babies out and put them in a box or something while she helped him pick the rocks up till they planted more vines.
I think those stories mean a lot to me, being associated with the winery, and so many people are interested in the California wine industry, and people who do know about the Livermore Valley and about Wente Brothers know that we have a very gravelly soil, which has a lot to do with the fact that your father made fine sauternes and semillons, and the fact that your mother, during her early years and starting those vineyards and having seven babies, was out there picking up rocks, I think is enchanting.
Well, she did that with the first few.
Uh-huh.
By the time I came along, my mother no longer picked up rocks.
I don't think so. No.
She had plenty to do.
I think so.
But after he made his first wine, they uh-huh. they did it all by hand crushing and everything. And he, by that time, had bought a spring wagon, as they called it in those days, and would put a couple of barrels on the back of it and go up to the Alamont country, the farmers, and peddle his wine.
Is that how he started out selling?
Yes, that's the way he started.
And he would sell it in big jugs, I suppose.
Well, he'd take it in these barrels and then, I don't know, I guess I imagine the farmers would have their own containers, and that's the way he started selling wine.
That's fantastic.
And the winery consisted of just about one room, one big room, which the boys later, many years later, tore down to build the new winery.
Now, by the boys,
my father's two sons.
Right. What Frieda means by the boys is she means her brothers, Herman and Ernest, who changed the label eventually to be the Wentze brothers.
That's right.
Right.
Testing, we're seeing how loud this is right now. Okay, getting back to taping the oral history with Frieda Wentze Tubbs Callahan. It is today Sunday, February 6, 1983. Frieda Wentze Tubbs Callahan is an original member of the Wentze family, which is this year celebrating its centennial in the Livermore Valley. Frieda was born on June 1st, 1896, which, as you can see, makes her a young woman right now, but full of history of the Livermore Valley. We're sitting right now in her kitchen on 4th Street on this rainy Sunday with the family Bible in front of us, because the next few questions that I have to ask Frieda have to do with her brothers and sisters and different things that we want to talk about their lives. I'd also like to reintroduce myself. I'm Earl Wentze. I'm married to Eric, who is the grandnephew. Is that right? Grandnephew. You're the great aunt.
Yeah.
So that makes Eric your grandnephew. Okay. I would like to talk about your siblings. Now, just to go over for an outline's sake, Frieda is number 6 out of the 7 Wentze children. The first part of the tape, we talked a lot about her parents' marriage and about how they met and about the early years a little bit in Livermore and about how her father started the winery, Wentze Brothers. The first child was May, the second child, Carolyn. Then there were the 3 brothers, Carl with a C, Ernest, and Herman. Then Frieda was the 6th child, and then Hilma. Frieda, what year was May born?
May was born on May the 7th, 1886.
1886. Can you tell me a little bit, about May?
Well, May was a real farmer's daughter. She liked to drive, in her younger days, liked to drive horses. In those days, we did not have an automobile, so we just drove around with a horse and top buggy, as we called it, or a two-seater surrey. And May would love to drive the horses. And in later years, May had as her hobby sewing. She was a beautiful seamstress. She took lessons in Oakland from a lady there on how to sew, and she made much of our clothing for the girls. She also was a very fine cook, and especially she cooked at the church dinners. We had church dinners, and May was always in the kitchen.
Was this the Presbyterian church?
Same Presbyterian church, in the same location as now the original church.
And was that little chapel built?
That was the original church.
The little chapel is still standing on part of the original structure on 4th Street.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we used to get where now the Sunday school rooms are.
Right.
Is where we used to serve our annual dinners. And the kitchen was right behind that, and that's where you'd always find May.
Uh-huh.
My other sister Carolyn and I would be waiting on the tables and doing things like that.
Couldn't keep you away from where the people and the action was.
Oh, yes, we were all very busy. My mother also helped there, but not too much. She said she'd let her girls do that. During the early flu, which was in about 1920s.
Following World War I.
That's right. And many people here in Livermore were very seriously ill with that flu, and May and a few of the church ladies did much cooking and delivering of especially soups and things to the families who were suffering. So that was May's past time.
Did any members of the Wente family, any of your brothers or sisters, get sick during this time?
Only me.
Only you?
I had it quite badly.
You did?
But I came out okay.
It looks like. is there anything else you wanted to say about May, or can I ask you about Carolyn now?
I think that about takes care of May.
Yeah, what year was Carolyn born?
Carolyn was born on October 9th, 1887. Mm-hmm. When Carolyn and May first went to school, neither one of them could speak English. And so May was very timid, and Carolyn was the opposite.
Because German was always spoken between your parents?
Yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
Because my mother couldn't speak English then.
Uh-huh.
And there was no one else for her to speak to, so she and my dad spoke German. So the two first girls spoke nothing but German when they went to school, and May would cry because the rest of the kids called them Dutchies.
Oh.
But Carolyn would toss it off, and soon they were all speaking English. Carolyn's hobby as she grew older was her voice, singing. She had a very beautiful contralto voice, and she loved music. This might be interesting to you. In those days, at the funeral services, always they had a vocalist, and this was one of her things that she did for charity. She sang at almost every funeral. Mm. Without pay.
Mm.
Because she loved her singing. And now, she also sang in the church choir for many, many years.
Uh-huh. I wanted to ask you, how big was Livermore at this time? This is the mid-1880s.
3,000.
Maybe 3,000?
About 3,000, I'd say.
Uh-huh. So, a town where everybody knew everybody very, very well.
Certainly. Uh-huh. You'd walk down the main street and you'd say, hello, Joe, or whatever. Whoever it was, everybody knew everybody.
Right.
Quite different than today.
Quite different. But actually, the real growth of Livermore didn't even come till the lab came about 30 years ago.
Right.
Slow, steady growth for 70 years, and then the last 30 years, rapid growth, right?
That's right.
Next was Brother Carl.
Carl was born March 27th, 1889, and he was a farmer boy like all the rest of them, but as he grew older, he wanted to do something else, so he became a banker. At first, his first job in a bank was as a runner, Central National Bank in Oakland. You may not know what a runner was.
You'll have to explain for everybody on the tape, Frida.
In those days, now we have the
couriers? No?
The bulletproof cars that carry the money from one bank
right,
to another, transfer.
Right. Yeah.
In those days, we didn't have those.
Uh-huh.
So the runner would, in transferring money from one bank to another in Oakland, Carl would tell, there'd be two fellas go out. One would be carrying the money, or they exchange checks to take to another bank, and another one would be following with a gun. And he was a big, husky guy, so he followed. That's what he did. He worked in the Central Bank for about 6 months, and then they started the local bank here in Livermore. But Mr. Palmentier, who was president of Central Bank, was president of the little bank that started here. My father was vice president, and later he became the president. And the
what was Mr. Palmentier?
Palmentier.
How do you spell that?
P-A-L-M-A-N-T-E-R. He was a very influential banker in Oakland, president of Central National Bank.
And so they started a branch in Livermore.
It really wasn't a branch. It was a new local bank.
Uh-huh.
But he sort of sponsored it and helped the local people with my father, Mr. Hegeman, Mr. McCown, Mr. Hunter, and a few others that I can't remember, formed this new little bank.
This was as soon as Carl had grown up. Was he in his early 20s or so?
Yes, he was in his early 20s
at
that time. Carl was in his third year in high school before he entered the bank, this was, and my whole family had typhoid fever, including Hilma, who was a baby, my mother and father, everyone again but me.
Oh, really?
And they all had typhoid fever, And when the boys went back to go back to school, Ernest, Carl, and Herman were then in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Carl would not go back because he said he was not going to be behind his regular class. Ernest and Herman went back. That's when Carl went to work in the bank. That's what caused him to go into the bank.
Well, he did all right for himself.
And for never having been a college graduate, which he later sort of regretted,
uh-huh.
he finally ended up by being the president of the Bank of America.
Worldwide.
Worldwide.
Worldwide, with headquarters in San Francisco at the time, as now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's...
Well, the story I've heard about... Uncle Carl is that he got tired, this is what Granddad, who's Ernest, used to say, he got tired looking at the wrong end of a mule. Decided there's better things to do with his life than look at the wrong end of a mule plowing fields in Livermore, so that's why he had to go on and get into banking.
In which he was very successful.
Very, yes.
And this might be interesting to you. When he worked in the bank here in Livermore, he lived at home. He was not married at that time. He lived at home, but my father believed that we all should know the value of money. So he said that Carl would not have to pay for room and board, but he would have to milk the two family cows morning and night and take care of the milk, which they, in those days, put through a... separator,
uh-huh.
and he had to tend to that. That paid for his room and board.
Oh.
Later, when I worked in the bank, I worked in the same bank with him, and my job to pay for my board was to get breakfast a couple mornings a week and wash the dinner dishes. We did not have a dishwasher in those days.
Yeah, I bet not.
But that's the way we paid our room and board.
Yes. I remember I got to meet... Brother Carl in 1970, which was just before he died, and at that time, of course, he was retired and living in San Francisco.
Carl was a very handsome man.
Mm-hmm. A large man
and a very handsome man,
right.
But very friendly. The different employees of the Bank of America, whom I met in later years, always remarked about that,
mm-hmm.
that he was so friendly. When he'd make his official calls at the bank, he would come behind the counter and pat him on the back and say, "Hello, Joe," or "Hello, Rose," or "Mary," or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and was very, very friendly. Never held up himself as being a head man of the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the thing about Carl, for which he was well known, was a storyteller. He loved stories, and at any gathering where he was, they always called on him for stories. He was a member of the local Company I, which was a local group of men who organized, I don't know what they organized for in the first place.
Part of a military organization.
Yeah, it was a military organization.
That was Dick Callahan, who's sitting here with us. Dick, of course, is Frida's husband.
Yes. Company I was organized to, assist the regular army if needed. And Carl was one of those original members. And when they later years, as they were older men, had their gatherings, he would always be called upon to tell his funny stories, some good, some a little bit off color.
But he could tell them.
But he could tell them.
I'd like to now hear about Granddad, who is obviously my husband Eric's grandfather, who indeed passed away a year and a half ago. Ernest August Wente was the fourth Wente child born to Frida's parents, and he was the eldest of the Wente brothers. He started working in the wine business, which later became known as Wente Brothers. Can you tell me about Granddad, about Ernest?
Ernest was born July 9th, 1890, on my mother's 30th birthday. And he always worked on the farm. But after he finished high school, he went to the University of California, Davis, and was enrolled in, I think, the first class.
That's right. I've
at Davis.
He was.
He was a true farmer all his life.
Granddad was known and loved throughout the wine industry, and I think that he was given a lot of credit for innovations in the growing of grapes. And obviously he'd had the experience and expertise of years. I can remember many times my husband Eric would talk about conversations that Eric and Philip, his brother, had with Granddad concerning what to do 1 year to the next. 1 year there might be more grapes, 1 year there might be more rain, 1 year there might be more heat, whatever. And Granddad, because obviously he'd had the years and years of experience, would always come through with wisdom.
And his other love was his cattle. Ernest loved his cattle, and up till the time he died, almost.
It's about talking about how Granddad loved his cattle, and about, what were you saying?
He rode his horseback up on the hills until not too long before he died, mm-hmm. and after that he would take his auto and take up hay and see that the cattle had water. He just loved his cattle mm-hmm. more than the winemaking, really.
Yeah.
He was the farmer. The farmer and the cattleman.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why he and my brother Herman made such a good team. Herman loved making the wine and meeting the people to whom they sold the wine. But Ernest was the farmer.
Mm-hmm. And Ernest was the grape grower.
That's right.
Did he always have cattle? Like when the winery was starting, did your family raise cattle?
Not to the, as I remember it, not to the extent that Ernest did afterwards. Mm-hmm. They were too busy with their getting organized in their winery.
About during Prohibition? What did that do to their involvement with the cattle end of the business?
Ernie had cattle then.
Right.
And cattle then. And they kept making, during Prohibition, they kept making their wine and storing it, mm-hmm. but they didn't sell for sacramental purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we do have some cattle now, people say, oh, why do you have cattle? And I'll say, well, Granddad and his brother had to survive Prohibition.
That's right. And they had this beautiful grazing land of the hills that they could not plant vines on, so they let their cattle run over these hills, mm-hmm. and they thrived.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. The hills still have the cattle on them, and the view of the whole valley is beautiful from up there.
That's right. And that was Ernie's love, his mm-hmm. cattle.
Granddad, a few years before he died in
April 16, 1961.
He died 81.
October 22nd, 1981.
A year and a half ago. But Granddad was doing a taped interview, which is one of the reasons it's now Frida's turn, because at that time we knew that she had a lot to say, but people were busy talking to Granddad about the wine industry, so here we are now talking about all these other good things too. I think, could we talk a little bit about Herman and what Herman did?
Mm-hmm. Herman was born November 4th, 1892. Herman was an entirely different disposition than Ernest, and he loved meeting people, and he loved his wine making.
Mm-hmm. Now, Herman was the other Wente brother, as it later turned out.
That's right. They organized the firm of Wente Brothers. When my father had the winery, he did not bottle that under a name. He sold his wine mostly wholesale.
Do you remember when he started bottling his own under the Val de Oro label?
No, I couldn't give you that date.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't give you that. I don't know.
But it was the boys later.
But after the boys, after my father turned the winery over to the boys, is when they took the name of Wente Brothers, and it was Herman and Ernest. And Herman really was the winemaker, and Ernest grew the grapes and was the farmer.
Right. And wasn't the name Wente Brothers adopted after Prohibition?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Herman attended the local schools, as we all did, and then he was a graduate of the University of California. And after he graduated from the University of Berkeley, he came back to work on the farm in the winery. He was well known throughout the state as a winemaker. In fact, they called him Mr. Winemaker of California, I think is the name that they, among the grape industry that he was known. He also was very active in the Wine Institute.
Oh, very active, yeah. I've seen lots of pictures. There are pictures at Wente Brothers right now of Herman and the special honors and awards. He was quite a leader, I understand.
And Herman loved to travel among the, meet his customers, the people who had restaurants or hotels. And as I was talking to my brother Carl one day, and he said if I had his personality and the number of friends that he had among the hotels and restaurants in the, throughout the United States, I would be very proud of myself. Because any place you went, they would know Herman because of his pleasant personality.
Herman died in 1961.
April 16, 1961. It was his date that I gave you before instead
right.
of Ernest.
Right. But it was an untimely death. He was not that old at the time.
No. Herman suffered greatly from his hip. His hip joint had deteriorated, and he was suffering such pain that he just couldn't take it anymore. And so he went back to Boston, to the hospital in Boston, and had what they thought at that time was the finest team of surgeons for installing, I guess you'd say, new hip joints, which was practically new at that time. And he thought he had the very best surgeon, and he did have, but a blood clot took him within a few days.
Now,
so he died very suddenly.
Right, and that was when my husband's father, Carl, was a young man working at the winery, and he had to take over a lot of Herman's responsibilities at that time.
That's right.
And, of course, then he still had the counsel of his father, Ernest, your other brother. Well, we've talked about May, Carolyn, Carl, Ernie, and Herman, which brings us to you. But before I talk about you and ask you questions about your childhood and your marriage and so on, I'd like to know about the seventh child, who is Aunt Hilma.
Hilma Ernestine Wente was born June 28, 1903. She also attended the local schools, as we all did. And for your information, when I say local schools, there was one elementary school on Fifth Street, Livermore.
Is it where the Fifth Street school now
it's
is?
It's the same location,
same
but
location.
Not the same school. This is the second school that was built there. And that...
Right, you can see it right there, right over
yes,
there.
Yes, we're looking at it from my kitchen window. And there was one high school, and of course she attended that, was a graduate of that, as we, the rest of us were. She attended the University of California in Berkeley and was a graduate there, and had hoped to go out into the business world. She graduated in a course in business or administration, but instead she married Ed Hageman.
Right.
Who was a childhood friend and one from a very prominent farming family in Livermore. And so she married Ed, and that ended her career as a business gal on the outside world.
And they were married over 50 years?
Yes, they were married over 50 years before Ed died a couple of years ago.
Right.
She has two children, Edmund Hageman Jr., and he is a big... operates a large farm in the San Joaquin Valley, a very successful farmer.
Okay, so we've talked about, well, we haven't totally talked about Frida, who's number six, is sitting right here, but there were seven Wentes in this generation, and Ernest had one son, who was Carl, and Hilma was the other of the seven children who had children. What are the names of her children?
Edwin Hageman Jr.
Mm-hmm.
and Barbara. Edwin operates a very large farm in the San Joaquin Valley and is a very, very successful. He raises several kinds of crops, corn and sugar beets and wheat and several other things.
And lettuce.
And lettuce.
And he has, do you want to know about his children too? He has two children, but they're not following farming. And Barbara, Hilma's other child, is married to Ray Jablon, and he is a computer expert. In fact, he has charge of the computers for the Chabot College.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we've covered a lot about your siblings, and I'd like to start asking you, Frieda, more about growing up in Livermore. I guess my first question would be to tell us a little bit about your early memories of growing up at the house, which stood, your parents' original house, which stood way out Tesla Road. Was it called Tesla Road?
Yes.
Yeah. Must have been a very busy household.
Yes, it was. Every afternoon, in the German custom, my mother would have to have her coffee klatsch, if you know what that means.
Yes, I do. Sounds like the center of fun.
And all our friends from Livermore, they would always arrive about 3 o'clock, and the coffee pot was always there waiting for them with some cake, homemade coffee cake. That was the daily deal. And on Sunday nights, the family would gather for a Sunday night supper, and all the children could bring in their friends, and anybody would come. Would be a big Sunday night gathering. And we didn't run around to see the movies or anything like that. It was always just our entertainment at home.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe my sister Carolyn would play the piano, and we'd stand around and sing, or we did play card games. In later years, as we grew older, we would play penny ante with my father for 10-cent jackpot. That was the limit. And because he said we were just playing for fun, and we played as if we were playing for the world.
Yeah.
And every Sunday night we did this.
Sounds like your home was the social center of Livermore at that time.
Of that certain bunch of...
It was a fun place.
Certain bunch of young people that we ran around with, and my father and mother always said they would much rather have us have our friends come in,
mm-hmm,
and meet the young people that we were running around with than have us running around the country.
Well, this was the early 1900s. Two questions come to mind. One is, on these Saturday nights or Sunday nights out at your parents' home, did you drink any wine? And my second question would be, how did people get there?
Horse and buggy.
Horse and buggy.
they came by horse and buggy. Well, later they came by cars, as cars came in. See, the first automobile in town was owned by Henry Crane. Henry Crane, and he had a garage. And he had one of the... If he didn't have the first, he had one of the first.
He was a mechanic?
Yes, he owned a garage. And another one of the early automobiles was owned by our local doctor, Dr. Taylor.
W.S. Taylor.
W.S. Taylor.
Do you remember about what year that would have been?
No, but I know that my father's first car was in 1910.
Oh, really?
We had our car in 1910 because my two sisters went to Europe, and when they came home, we met them at the depot as a surprise in an automobile.
Oh, now the depot. The depot is the one that's still standing, right down there.
SB Depot.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of the depot, one of the big social things of the town was on Sunday nights to go to the depot to see who came home on the train.
I know a little bit about that because one of the pictures that I have in my home from the Livermore Historical Guild, I guess, is a picture of meeting the train.
That's right.
And I really can't tell for sure what year it was. You can tell somewhat early 1900s and so on by looking at the clothing.
Yes. It may be the picture when my two sisters came home from Europe. We were, I don't know, but that was 1910. They went to Europe to see the Passion Play, which was in 1910 in Oberammergau.
Oberammergau.
And that Passion Play is held just every 10 years. That's how I went in 1970. I saw it in 1970. But the main thing was the social event of Sunday afternoon was go to the train, the depot, and everybody and his brother would be there, and you'd meet all your friends at the depot on Sunday night.
The train came into town once a week.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Every night?
Every night.
Okay, but Sunday night was the big event?
Well, people would go to the city. If you were going to go to San Francisco to go to a show or anything, you had to go by train.
It must have been an all-day project.
Oh, sure.
You had to stay. You had to stay over.
Well, what? You stayed overnight in the
city. Saturday night to go down to go to a dinner or something, you went by train.
And you went by boat? Yes?
No boat.
When was the Bay Bridge built?
Oh, yes, from Oakland to San Francisco.
Oh, by ferry, yeah.
Ferry boat, sure.
What year was the Bay Bridge built? Do you remember? It was after World War One?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, if I tell you a little bit about myself later, I can tell you about the opening of the Bay Bridge. It was when George was mayor.
Okay. Well, let me ask you then a little bit about your education in Livermore. It was the one-room schoolhouse.
No, it wasn't a one-room schoolhouse. One school.
One school.
One school. There were 8 grades. There were teachers for each grade and the principal. But there were several country schools around, one-room schools.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several of those around, oh, I would say 6 or 7 of those.
Yeah.
And there was the one high school, which has since been destroyed, and the present high school is a new one, and that built after that original high school.
Mm-hmm. Your small school must have been full of siblings.
Yes. Graduated from high school, which was in 1914. There were only 9 in the class.
Wow. It was Livermore High School.
And that was Livermore High School.
9 in the class.
1914.
That took in all the outside grade schools.
Yes. They went to that one school, and then later we had the Catholic Church organ had a convent,
mm-hmm.
and so that took some of the elementary children, but they did not have a high school.
How did all those kids get to school before 1914? What were
they
doing?
Well, I'll tell you about my brothers and sisters. They went with a horse and a cart.
A horse and a cart?
Yeah, a cart. They'd all pile in this cart and go to school that way.
And then the horse waited for them?
They had a barn at school. They put their horses, the different kids put their harness their horses and put them in.
They brought a sack of hay with them and put that in the back and fed the horse there.
Brought a sack of hay. Why not?
Sure. But by the time I went to school, my dad had it. Well, I walked some of the time. Walked home many days from school.
Probably about 3 miles.
2 7/10 to be exact.
To be exact. Okay. Well, I would like to get you talking a little bit about your marriage to George, but I don't want to jump too quickly, so we're going from high school. Did you go back? Tell me what you did after high school.
I worked in, by the time I got out of high school, this bank that I spoke about that my brother Carl worked in was located in what is known as the Masonic Hall on the corner of First and Livermore, First Street and Livermore Avenue, right by the flagpole. So I worked in the bank for a little while until I could make up my mind what I wanted to do in college.
Mm-hmm.
But I like banking. I like mathematics. And my father said, if you like this, why, you can stay. So I stayed and worked in the bank for 4.5 years. You might be interested in knowing what my salary was, $35 a month.
Oh, boy.
My brother Carl started a few years previous to this at $30 a month.
Sounds like a great job.
It was a great job. And the whole force of the bank was our cashier, who was a very intelligent gentleman who'd come out from the East because of his health. And so Mr. Goodell was the cashier, Carl was assistant cashier, and I was the one and only girl.
That's Carl, your brother.
My brother Carl.
Right.
Who later became the president of the Bank of America.
Right.
When the bank sold out to the local bank sold out in later years, mm-hmm. Carl went to, with the Bank of America and worked himself up to that position.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed until I was about ready to marry George Tubbs.
Well, how did you meet George?
He was very easy to meet. He was a local character. He had the Union Ice Agency and Soda Works. You may not know what the Soda Works. Nowadays they buy all their soft drinks and cans from large companies, but in those days, the Soda Works bottled their own soda with the syrups, and he did this and sold that, all kinds of sodas as they called them, and ice, and peddled the ice around town with Polly, his one old white horse in an ice wagon, and carried these 300-pound blocks of ice on his back into the many saloons which we had up and down Main Street.
Would he make a delivery each day?
Yes.
Each day. No wonder he knew everybody.
And sure. And delivered also, people didn't have electric refrigerators in their homes either. He also delivered ice to their homes.
So probably if the town was... Was it as big as 3,000 at this time?
It was about 3,000. And then George became, you might be interested in knowing that he was elected on the city council, which was composed at that time of five members, and the mayor was selected by them as the mayor
mm-hmm.
for a period of a year at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And George was elected two terms for on the city council. And 6 years of that, he was the mayor.
About what year was that?
In the 30s. And you mentioned about the Bay Bridge. It was at that time, during George's mayorship, that he and I had a lot of fun, because we liked to go out and attend whatever was interesting. And at that, during his term as mayor, the Bay Bridge was
dedicated.
Golden Gate Bridge was dedicated.
Also.
So we attended both of those affairs.
Oh.
And the...
You're trying to think of something else that was built?
I was trying to think of something else that was built at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But we attended the...
Maybe some highway?
Yes, the Alamont Pass.
Oh.
The Alamont Pass was... at that time, and the governor was here to dedicate the Altamont Pass
mm-hmm.
and the fair on Treasure Island. That's the Altamont.
Oh, yes.
So it was all during the 30s that mm-hmm. this happened, because it was all during George's administration, and
mm-hmm.
we attended them all.
Mm-hmm. And you were living in this house?
I was living in the same house. It might be interesting to know what the mayor of Livermore got for a salary at that time.
Yeah.
$10 a month, like the. all the councilmen did. And the city attorney, who was George's best friend, is Richard Callahan. And he was city attorney for 36 years.
And Richard Callahan is sitting right here.
And after my husband, George, died, I was a widow for 14 years. And then I married Richard, whose wife, in the meantime, had passed away.
Well, I know that we don't have a whole lot more time left on this tape, but there are several little threads that I want to pick up. And one of them is, there is a delightful family picture, and Frida is the apple of everybody's eye, and she's in the middle of this picture, taken, about 1900 or so, where you're a little girl with all the ringlet curls. And what I want to ask you is, about that time, your mother and father decided to take a steamer to Europe, and they chose you because they wanted to show you off to the relatives back home. Can you tell us a little bit about that trip?
Yes, I was in June 1901. I was 5 years old, and I was a baby at that time. And so my dad wanted to show one of his children to his mother in Germany. That was the main reason. So we went by train to New York and then went by boat to Germany and visited over there. And that was it. And then came back by boat, and that was what we were doing over in Germany.
Wasn't there some cute story that I remember hearing about some conversation you had with the captain of the ship? Do you remember what that was?
That was a ferry boat in Oakland. That was the ferry
boat. Oh, different story.
Different story, which my brother Artie used to like to tell on me.
Well, can you tell me that?
Well, I don't like to, but
oh,
I
you don't have to. You don't have to.
My father and mother were taking me to Oakland so I could ride the train and the ferry boat and the streetcars. This was something all new to me, my first time, about that same age. So we got on the ferry boat, and my father was lame. He walked with a cane because of an accident.
With a horse?
He fell off a hay wagon. Mm. They mm-hmm. loaded hay, and they loaded it loosely, and he slid off and cracked his hip, so he had a dry socket. That's why he walked with a cane.
Oh, I see.
Previously, I mentioned that George was mayor of Livermore for 6 years. I would like to mention some of the things that happened during his administration. Our post office was built, and Senator William Gibbs McAdoo was a speaker at the dedication. The WPA was operating at that time, and since the city of Livermore was allotted a certain amount of that money, George and the city councilmen decided to use it to the best advantage for needed permanent improvements, namely, renovating the city hall, putting in many sidewalks and curbs, and extensive work in the recreation park with its softball field, grandstand, and tennis courts. My father at that time was president of the high school board of trustees, which office he held for 21 consecutive years until his death, when my brother Ernest was elected to fill that office. After selling the soda works, George tried several business ventures, but for years stayed with what he enjoyed most, buying and renovating old houses and buildings. They were mostly small houses for low-income people. Some of the houses we sold and some we rented. George did the buying, building, renting, and maintenance of the houses. I collected the rents and monthly payments and did the bookkeeping. At that time, there was a great need for this type of houses. Between 1945 and 1955, we built a group of small houses on Railroad Avenue, which we called Pacific Court, and now is called Tubbsville. The houses were not fancy according to our present standards, but they were neat and clean, and the people who lived in them were happy. You will be surprised to hear the average monthly rents for the apartments, which was $25, and for the houses, about $45. We purchased a strip of land from Ora Kennedy Wiley in 1943 between College Avenue and Palm Avenue. It was at that time a grain field. We divided it into lots, and to subdivide it to the best advantage, we gave a strip to the city for a street, which we called Pepper Street. It is now known as South G Street. Lots sold for about $250 to $350. George's pride and joy was the garage that he built for Lear and Kimmler for their Ford agency. Stanley Gibson, the manual training teacher at the Livermore High School, supervised the construction. It was built of tile and brick and was the first steel-reinforced building in Livermore. When it was finished on August 8, 1927, George, who liked parties, dedicated with a big barbecue to which he invited the city officials, businessmen, and anyone who helped him with the construction. It is no longer a garage, but is now the municipal court building on North Livermore Avenue. George decided to retire, and we sold most of our properties when George suddenly died on December 1, 1957. For almost 14 years, I was a widow, and then I married our old friend Richard M. Callahan. After 55 years of practicing law in Livermore, he is now retired as of January 1, 1983. I am very proud to say that both of my husbands received the annual Civic Award from the Fraternal Order of Eagles in recognition for outstanding public service. George received it in 1956, and Dick received it a few years later. My hobbies have been church work, being a pink lady at the Valley Memorial Hospital, and traveling. Since my first ferry boat ride on San Francisco Bay, I have traveled around the world by planes and cruise ships and visited many interesting places. I have been from the North Cape in Norway to Cape Town, South Africa, the most northern and most southern spots in the Eastern Hemisphere, and from Alaska to Terra del Fuego, Chile, the most northern and most southern spots in the Western Hemisphere. However, Livermore has always been my home and always will be my home.
You have such a wealth of Livermore history that it's fascinating. When you talked about that first high school, was it located where it is now? Or was it...
On the recreation lot.
Oh, it was on the recreation lot. Okay, I wasn't clear of that. Yes. Uh-huh. And I just wanted to have that clear.
It was on the site where the recreation building lot is now.
Oh, okay. Good.
And it was the first Union High School in the state of California, if that's interesting to you.
Oh, yes. Yes. Huh. That's, I guess, by Union High School, they meant they unified the whole...
Well, all the various districts of all the schools, the outlying schools. But it was the first unified high school in the state of California. Therefore, it's DeMora High School, Union High School, number one.
Right. Hmm. Well, when you said Pacific Court, that rang a bell to me, because there is over across the street on G Street here, just as you go past that little green hedge there, there's a sign and it says Victory Court. Does that ring a bell at all? There used to be a sign there, and because there were there's buildings back behind that one house.
Yes, that was the old manual training building from the high school. When they built the new high school, George moved that old one over there and used it for a shop and storage shed.
Oh, is that right?
Huh. But the buildings I'm talking about on Railroad Avenue never were called that. They were always called Pacific Court until now they call it Tubbsville, and they're very dilapidated now. Whoever owns them does not take good care
it's
of them.
It's a shame. It really is. So, and then I wanted to ask you about the soda works. Where were they? Uh-huh. Do you want me to turn it off?
This tape is property of the Livermore Heritage Guild. No part of this tape may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, or by any information storage and retrieval system without the written permission from the Livermore Heritage Guild. Inclusion of brief quotations in a review are acceptable when proper and full credit is given to the oral history program of the Livermore Heritage Guild. Thank you.